Hi, welcome. This is Christina in the ICU. Today we're going to be talking to you about one of the ICU educational series for the podcast, and I have Dr. Kafer here with me, who's going to be talking about malignant hyperthermia. Take it away.
Hi, thank you so much for having me this morning. I'll talk a little bit about the normal physiology of malignant hyperthermia, the signs and triggers, the presentation, and how we can treat it here at the hospital. So just a quick review of the normal physiology. We have our normal nicotinic acetylcholine receptor. Normally, the way we have an action potential is sodium goes in, it generates a release of calcium from the sarcoplasmic reticulum, and the area that it gets released from is the ryanodine receptor. Calcium normally goes to actinomyosin, causing a muscle contraction. This ryanodine receptor is what's actually mutated in patients who have a predisposition to MH. So that leads to increased sensitivity, a decreased negative feedback, and these receptors are therefore more prone to opening. And when they open, they don't respond to normal feedback and they remain in their open position. As a result, we have so much calcium, it spills into the cell. We have a continued muscle contraction. It leads to a hypermetabolic state that ultimately uses a large quantity of ATP, and it generates heat and CO2, and that leads to anaerobic metabolism and acidosis. This is caused by sevoflurane, isoflurane, desflurane, as well as succinylcholine. So typically agents we use in the OR, but of course sux and sometimes these inhaled anesthetics are used in the unit as well. The exposure can lead to excessive triggering of the mutated receptor, and again, as I mentioned, lead to a hypermetabolic state. Patients may have had exposure to these agents in the past, and it may not be until their second or third exposure that they have an episode of MH. The presentation is autosomal dominant. There are other forms. It can be autosomal recessive and may have variable penetrance. We usually see in the first 3 decades of life, but it can also be seen a little bit later on. The time course is really important. When we have a patient, you want to look out for a rise in end-tidal CO2. And you'll notice that that rise doesn't necessarily respond to an increase in your minute ventilation. Other nonspecific signs are tachycardia, tachypnea, especially if the patient is breathing on their own. And then another associated finding is something called masseter muscle spasm. And that can be in as many as up to 50% of patients with MH, or that's another thing that could happen on its own. Later signs that you want to look out for are hyperthermia, cyanosis, hypoxia. Cardiac presentation would be peak T waves and cardiac dysrhythmias, skeletal muscle rigidity, dark urine, and total cardiovascular collapse. These are, of course, non-specific signs, so your level of suspicion should be high. And again, this increased metabolic state is going to lead to increased CO2 production, anaerobic metabolism, lactic acidosis. You also want to be on the lookout for rhabdomyolysis, secondary to the sustained muscle contraction. And again, you might be on the lookout for elevated CK levels in your patients if this goes untreated. The diagnosis is a clinical one from this constellation of symptoms that I just talked about. Usually these patients are diagnosed with what's called the caffeine halothane contracture test that's done at a specialized testing center. Genetic testing can also be done as well. If you have a patient who has MH, testing is recommended for family members as well. And something that we should think about in terms of MH in the ICU is that it's thought of as a disease or a process that happens inside the OR, but it can occur later in the anesthetic. So a patient could get dropped off in the ICU and potentially present with an episode of MH as well. So what needs to be done? Discontinue the offending agent, switch to something that you know is safe. The key here is something called dantrolene, which is a calcium channel blocker that's going to work specifically at that ryanodine receptor I was just talking about. That's given as a 2.5 mg/kg bolus, 5 to 10 minutes until symptoms abate. You'll flush your anesthetic system if you're in the OR and if that's applicable. You'll hyperventilate the patient and you'll treat that respiratory acidosis. You'll work on cooling the patient with saline, gastric lavage, and surface cooling. An arterial line will be useful for monitoring. You'll treat the hyperkalemia with calcium and insulin, as well as D5, sodium bicarb as well for the acidosis. A Foley catheter is important to monitor urine output, especially in the patient with rhabdo. Beta blockers may be useful as well, but again, avoid certain agents such as verapamil and diltiazem because those can have a negative impact at that calcium receptor. You'll switch your patient from a non-triggering agent if applicable, and some patients might need a prolonged dantrolene infusion once they're in the ICU. There is a hotline that you can call for help that's called the Malignant Hyperthermia Association of the U.S. There's a database and a hotline that's always available for help if that's necessary. If you have a patient with known MH, just make sure that you know you have an MH car, make sure you know where it is. Make sure you're in contact with the anesthesiologist and the OR team to come up with a good plan where you avoid these triggering agents. In pediatric patients, you want to avoid a gas induction and avoid other agents that might cause it as well. And then there are, of course, some rare diseases, but I'll mention them briefly, such as central core and multi-mini core myopathy, King-Denenborough syndrome, that do have an association with MH. That's basically the pathology. Do you have any questions about the recognition or the treatment or signs?
I do actually have one question. Can you just remind me where the MH carts are located?
Absolutely. There's two around the operative suites. There's one next to the staff elevators, and the second one is going to be in the back of the PACU, and those have instructions and printouts of what you'll need to do in that case.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.